Welcome back. The unmistakable vocal stylings of Great Britain's own Kate Bush and Wuthering Heights. Keep it right here on Coast to Coast. Tomorrow night, George Knapp is joined by ufologist Bill Burns to discuss eyewitness accounts and information from never-seen-before footage as he continues his hunt for the truth about flying saucers. First hour guest John Greenwald of the Black Vault talks about some of the intriguing declassified government documents from his online repository. That's tomorrow night or this morning, later tonight or tomorrow morning, rather, on Coast to Coast AM with George Knapp. We will come back and continue to delve into the lost and found tribes of Israel with Wanda and Nelson Thal. Keep it right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Wanda Thal is dedicated to the research of Bible history and the Lost Ten Tribes. Nelson Thal is a media scientist and protege of the late, great Marshall McLuhan. And the website is tribaltalkers.com. Let's talk about genetic markers, if you will. If we're looking for evidence, again, let's use the example of Ephraim in the British Isles. And if there is there a genetic marker that, I mean, if people wanted to identify whether or not they are from a certain tribe, one of the lost tribes, how would they do that?
I have a bombshell for you, Richard.
Love bombshells.
Yes, I do. It's a shocking one. It's something the Egyptian authorities didn't want anyone to know. They didn't want anyone to know about the DNA of Egyptian mummies. Okay, and this is the shocking reason. They found that King Tut's DNA was R1B. The closest match is that to the men of England, Ireland, and Scotland in Western Europe. 99.6% fit with the R1B haplogroup is revealed, and it is the most common Y chromosome in a haplogroup in Europe, reaching its highest concentrations in Ireland, Scotland, Western England, and the European Atlantic seaboard. And it really makes a lot of sense because Joseph married an Egyptian woman named Aseneth, and they had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh.
So that's the connection between King Tut and this blood
and
type.
1% of Egyptian men have that particular R1B haplogroup. And it was also shown in the Discovery Channel documentary, King Tut Unwrapped, that released the STR markers. Geneticists were able to reveal that that DNA was directly related to England, Ireland, Scotland, etc.
And what percentage of people in the British Isles have that? What did you call it, RB1?
Chromosome group in all of Europe, Western Europe. So that particular haplogroup is in, I guess it's the Y chromosome. It's just 99% fit for the people of those countries. So there's a direct relationship to the Egyptian mummies of old times. So Manasseh is definitely from the Egyptian era because his mother was Egyptian.
Richard, Nelson, go ahead.
A lot of books. There's a lot of great. First of all, people go to tribaltalkers.com, and they can go to Family Tree DNA. The link there, and it doesn't cost a lot. It's under $100, certainly under $100 American, and that is you can find out your haplogroup and find out what tribe you're in, and tribe you're from, which is very important, because for your own health, it's important. For instance, Richard, it's known about the lactose tolerance. People who are the genetics supports the idea of the lost tribes of Israel because they've found that there's a phenomenon called lactose tolerance, the ability to drink and digest milk. Now, most of the world is lactose intolerant, but the nations where the 10 tribes are all, for instance, the Bible reveals that Abraham and his family kept cattle. They drank milk and they made butter. And Exodus, it states that when the Israelites left Egypt, they took their cattle with them. And of course, it's known as Promised Land as a land flowing of milk and honey. And genetics shows that the people of the Western Isles are lactose tolerant. And the Bible is portrays Israelites as a cattle herding and milk drinking people, as I mentioned. And so it does fit that they found that the nations of North America, Australia, New Zealand, are all lactose tolerant, all were the tribes and the nations that were given to the tribes. And so genetically they can follow their migration. I had my DNA done, and they were able to tell me the route that my family took out of the Middle East, right around Spain and north to Ireland and to Scotland. And it's amazing. You can go to the 111th marker, which I did, and you're able to go right back into that period of time, go back in time, and see the movement and the geographical path that your family took to, and with me, my family left the Middle East and went and wound up in Scotland and in Ireland. My grandmother was born in Leeds. But
which of the tribes of Israel are your descendants from?
I'm a Levite, found to be a Levite, and I had the Cohen gene. And what happened is scientists actually identified a genetic marker, and they called it the Cohen gene. And 350,000 men have the Cohen gene today, and that's a subtribe of Levi. And Levi didn't get nation status. The Levites were sort of written out of their father's will and just were given towns and villages amongst the 10 tribes, and some in the land of Judah as well. But most of their towns were in Israel, in the north. But the genetics now is verifying what the myths. A matter of fact, one of the interesting, Stephen Oppenheimer wrote of the origin of the British. He's a DNA expert at Oxford University in England. And he verified Dr. Sykes's work about the migration of these people and where they left Palestine and how they wound up in the British Isles. And it's quite interesting that the genetics is now... on page 21 of the book Saxons, Vikings, and Celts, Sykes writes, "In my research around the world, I have more than once found that oral myths are closer to the genetic conclusions than anything else." So the science is finding that the oral myths are not inaccurate, even though all we had to follow was myths and archaeology and other things in the past. In the last few years, especially since the discovery of the genome and the mapping of the genome, now we have science to prove what before was not scientifically provable, but all the proofs that were used, as a Sherlock Holmes investigator would use, have turned out to be accurate as well.
So we've talked about Ephraim a little bit.
By the way, Richard, with regard to the linguistic studies, Hebrew is closer, English is closer to Hebrew than any other language, German or Latin. Matter of fact, the letter A and B in the Hebrew language is Aleph Bet.
Aha.
We call it the alphabet. Where do you think the word alphabet came from? Came from the Hebrew, Aleph Bet. So it's right there before our eyes. We just have to open them up. I mean, the Yiddish word for Jacob is Yankel. And do you know anybody by the name of the Yanks?
Well, that leads me to my next area of inquiry, which has to do with...
Who are the Yanks?
Yes, the Americans. Well, because I wanted to ask you about, what about the tribe of Manasseh? And where did they go? And I think you've just answered that question. So Manasseh is... Where did Manasseh go?
The descendants of Mature are Manasseh. And they came from Scotland, Ireland, England, and they went to the United States. They started off with the 13 colonies, and that's the tribe of Manasseh.
Manasseh's son is Makir, and that's where we get the word Amerikir, America.
Hamirkaram, America, yes.
Ah, okay, so, but
he was number 13.
Number 13.
I thought there were 12 tribes.
Well, of the brothers, there was the 12, and Joseph, the two sons, inherited his position, so that was 12 and 13. So Joseph's number 11, they became the 12 and 13.
Yeah,
okay. So it was really like 12 tribes with two half-tribes.
Got it.
And what happened is Jacob adopted his two grandsons and gave them the full status as sons. So Joseph, the tribe of Joseph, a 12th tribe, split into two. It went bypassed him to his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. So 12, in effect, became 13, even though in the north you have still the 10 and the 2. It's just because in the north you've got the tribe of Joseph, and it also split into two, and because the blessing went to his two sons. Now, it's notable, Richard, the blessing didn't go to the sons of Judah. I mean, one of the uphill battles in this whole thing is people have a misunderstanding of the terms Hebrew. Abraham was a Hebrew, but he wasn't a Jew. He wasn't Isaac. Of course, Abraham and Isaac's, and the blessings went to Isaac's sons or the Saxons.
Now, you talked about the origin of the name America, and give me that again, because I mean that differs from, you know, what I learned in school, which, you know, who knows, you know, it could be totally wrong, but I think most of us learned that America was likely named after Amerigo Vespucci, the explorer.
Well, you were told Columbus discovered America too, so we need a revamping of everything that was taught, because it basically, as we know with other things, it was plainly all wrong.
Okay, so but give me the origin of America again, according to your research.
Well, Machir was a descendant of Manasseh, so you get Ha Maturin, sounds like American. They were also called Ha Makiri, possibly where the word Amerigo comes from. So there's the connection to the sounding of Amerigo, which that was where they said originally came from, then to America. So if you look at the origin of the people that went to America, they're from, most people say, I'm English, Irish, Scottish background. So the population of America were mainly from the Isles. I mean, those were the mass migration movements from the Isles to the Americas.
Richard, first of all, the genetics, of course, relay and show that Manasseh traveling across the ocean to America, but also when you look at the promises of Abraham that were promised, who became a great and mighty nation, who was numerous as the stars of heaven, who would spread abroad and control the gates of the world, have the riches of the nations on earth and be the chief among the nations, be a great naval power. And of course, the symbols in Micah 1:16, we're told that Manasseh's symbol would be the bald eagle. Micah 1:16 in the Old Testament.
So it actually says that? Symbol, it says a bald eagle?
Bald eagle, yeah, Micah 1:16.
That's pretty remarkable. I don't know my Bible as well as I should, but I'm not aware of that.
We're told in Numbers 24:8 and Deuteronomy 33:17 that the Ephraim would have the symbol of the lion and the unicorn. And quite frankly, if you look at our website, you'll see the crest of England's crest has the unicorn and the lion. So the symbols line up, the linguistics line up, the writers of the past, as I said, Julius Caesar, Herodotus, Josephus, they all knew where these tribes were traveling, that they had gone to the Isles, etc.
And as we find out, they're essentially hiding in plain sight. It wasn't
in
so much that they were lost; they were, I think, the term you used on your website is gentilized. They became Gentiles.
Well, they forgot their own identity. All of them forgot, and that was because they had gone away from basic concepts and teachings. They started to worship the Baal, the bull, and that's where you also get John Bull, the name John Bull. They carried that in their banner, the worship of the golden calves. They didn't get away from that, and also the sun worship. They never really left that totally, and you could see that in the worship of the Christmas tree and Easter and all these other traditional things that were still part of the old pagan religion that they took with them or they adopted along the way, but they were actually kicked out or thrown out into captivity because of these these worshiping problems that they had, that they weren't that they were disobeying and really not following the God's law. But you can also, if you check out the number 13, you'll see that the evidence of Manasseh being America is very prevalent in the pattern of the Great Seal. I mean, you have the 13 stars in the crest above the eagle, the 13 stripes in the shield above the eagle's breast, 13 arrows in the eagle's left claw, 13 olives and leaves in the eagle's right claw, 13 letters in the motto carried by the eagle, A pluribus unum, out of many one. I mean, that's a huge clue right there. The bow itself in the claw represents the peaceful nation, and the arrows are the military might, the warring nation. And you can look at the seal too. It has the on the back of the $1 bill, it has a pyramid. I mean, right there, there's the Egyptian connection with 13 steps. The eye of Provident is God watching us. Novus Ordo Seclorum means new order of the ages or a new beginning for America. I think that's what Trump is saying now, isn't he? So the number 13 is very, very prevalent in the symbolism itself.
And the 13 again, referring to the 12 tribes, but the 13 brothers.
Yes. Well, there were two half tribes taking over for Joseph, so that's how you get Manasseh is the number 13.
We're coming up.
Manasseh 13.
Okay, we're coming up on a break in just a couple of minutes here, and then after the break, we will open up the lines and welcome questions and comments. But going into the break, and we'll pick up on this point afterwards as well. I mean, so we've located the lost tribes, and they've been scattered across Europe and into America. What's the significance then of that? I mean, it is fascinating from an anthropological, an archaeological, linguistic, genetic, but I guess prophetically, what is the takeaway from this that we've located these lost tribes?
Well, they're supposed to be found. I mean, that's part of the whole new covenant that is coming up. They're found. We know where they are. They're also, they've kind of gone away from the blessings, too, because they've turned away again. That seems to be the cycle. Seems to be, especially when they were sent out in the wilderness during the Moses times and when they started worshiping Baal worship. They seem to do this over and over again. So with great blessings come great responsibilities. And unfortunately, at this time, Ephraim and Manasseh have turned away. They're in trouble. But
yeah, Richard, I would add that most of the book of Revelation and prophecy is speaking to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And smaller nations like Egypt and Libya and Lebanon are all mentioned in the Bible. Ethiopia are found named in the Bible. So after in 1800s, after 2520 years, a nation like England starts to take control of the gates of the world. And its population starts to create a British Empire around the whole world. And you can see that this is the culmination and proof of the material blessing that was promised to Abraham.
And all right, Nelson, I've got to jump in here. We'll take a time out, come back, and continue to drill down on the lost and found tribes of Israel. Here are the Eagles, the late Glenn Frey and company, with a tune from their last album called How Long. This is the Rolling Stones, Following the River. This was a track that was recorded in 1972 during the Exile on Main Street sessions, but was left off that album, but then was included in the reissue of that album, which I believe was called Still in Exile, back a few years ago. Great tune. Following the River. And we are following the river of sorts tonight. In this case, we are following the lost tribes of Israel across the Jordan River, across Europe, and across the pond to America. More of my conversation with Wanda and Nelson Fall, tribaltalkers.com, and we'll also take your questions and comments. Stay with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Wanda and Nelson Thal, my guests, as we discuss the lost and found tribes of Israel. Tribaltalkers.com, the website, before we go to the phone lines, and they are jammed, people willing, or waiting rather, with questions and comments to talk about this fascinating subject. For me, Wanda and Nelson, it seems to me that, for me personally anyway, that the takeaway is this. If, when we're reading the Bible, and it's talking about Israel, what it's really talking about is us, all of us, right? It's not just the nation of Israel, the modern day nation of Israel. It's talking about those 10 tribes that traveled to the British Isles. It's talking about America. It's talking about Britain. It's talking about Europe. Am I right in my thinking here?
You're absolutely right. Can I just say one thing first? In 1776, Thomas Jefferson proposed that the seal for the newly declared United States of America should represent the children of Israel in the wilderness, led by a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And on the other side, Hengst and Horsa, the Saxon chiefs, from whom we claim the honor of being descended and whose political principles and form of government we have assumed. Yes, all the tribes are represented in Northern Europe. You have in Sweden, all these other countries. Holland is Zebulon. They're all represented there. Gad is Switzerland. Reuben is France. And these are all the sons of Jacob. So you're absolutely right there. And it's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, Richard, what's interesting is the way in which what happens is a nation takes on the traits and characteristics of the ancient tribal chieftain father. So, for instance, Reuben, the Gauls come from Goths, and the Goths were part of the North 10 tribes. But Reuben lost the birthright because he slept with his father's concubine. So he had a real problem with his sexuality. And it's interesting today, the whole proclivity towards sex, that was what got Reuben in trouble. And it's interesting, France is Reuben, the descendants of Reuben, is a Reubenite nation. And it's understood now genetically, it's proven that they're the descendants of the tribe of Reuben. So what happens is, a lot of the nations like Canada and America and Britain take on the characteristics of nations of the original tribal chieftain, the original father, in this case, Ephraim. Ephraim means aristocrat, by the way, in Hebrew. And the British are the epitome of aristocracy. The name Ephraim means aristocrat.
All right, let's go to the first time caller line, and Clay is in Louisiana. Clay, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hi, Mr. Sarah. How are you doing? I have a question concerning the African-American slave trade and lost Hebrew tribes. We know that from the Bible that Moses and Joseph were both able to blend into Egyptian society to hide, and that would not be the first instance of Israelites hiding among Egyptians. So what, if any, part did the American slave trade play with the lost 10 tribes? And I'll take my
question.
Good question,
and it's a complex answer. First of all, part of Egyptian society, if you look at the hieroglyphics, most of the Israel were white, blonde, and blue-eyed, and they were dark as well, but they weren't dark-skinned. But remember, Haile Selassie, who was very black, was a descendant of the tribe of Judah. So the thing is this, when it comes to skin color, there's Jews who are white and black, And there's Israelites who were white and black. It's very, very difficult to necessarily pin down because a person's black means that they're necessarily not Israel. You can be of the house of Israel and one of the tribes and still have black skin. As I say, Haile Selassie, if you look at his website, he traced his descendant directly to David. Now, David was white, but he had a number of wives. So some of his wives were dark-skinned or black-skinned, and so they also are Jews. There are a lot of Jews in Israel who are black-skinned as well as white-skinned. So the tribe and the family can maintain its genetic markers, and yet it can become black, or we have Japanese, some people who are Oriental-looking. Remember, the 70, all the human beings on the planet are made of 70, come from 70 tribes, and that all descend from the three sons of Noah. We're all sons of either Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem is basically the white-skinned of the world. Of course, they intermarried, but basically Shem was the white-skinned. Japheth is where the word Japan comes from. Japheth are the Orientals of the world. And Ham are the black-skinned of the world. Now, there's intermarriage, etc., but basically you have the Bahamas, that's mostly the black-skinned. You have the different sons of Noah, and they're identifiable in many cases. And genetically, they're becoming it's becoming more of a science. As far as the slave trade, well, I mean, that sort of is outside the scope of the lost 10 tribes. With regard to, there were slaves, the lost 10 tribes, they were slaves in Egypt and were taken away. And certainly Ephraim had slaves, black slaves, and Ephraim and Manasseh had black slaves. And we're not making, of course, slavery. We're not advocating slavery, but that's just the way it was in those days.
All right. East of the Rockies, Shelley is in Texas. Good morning, Shelley. Welcome to Coast AM.
Do you mean Sally?
Is it Shelley?
There's Sally in East Texas.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sally. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Well, this is so exciting. It's absolutely wonderful because my son doing our genealogical research recently discovered over the past few years that we have Hebrew and Jewish ancestry, and when they said Iberia, it just like, oh wow, yeah, that's where some of ours came from. We were mostly from the Mediterranean area, and so this is very exciting. However, you talked about being Gentiled out. And that's exactly what happened to our family. And even though I understand now my paternal grandmother taught Judaism in the home while she attended the Baptist church. So I'm wondering how many people are like me, how many like our family, are actually, Hebrew or Jewish and don't know it.
Well, what I think it's important to remember is that the word Hebrew comes from Abraham's genetic father, whose name was Heber, H-E-B-E-R. So Abraham was a Hebrew, but all Hebrews are not Jews, but all Jews are Hebrews, just like all Californians are Americans, but not all Americans are Californians. So, for instance, you can be of Hebrew stock. The Lost Ten Tribes are all Hebrew. The British are Hebrew. The French are Hebrew. The Americans are Hebrew, but they're not Jewish. But they're Hebrew because they're one of the 10 tribes, one of the brothers of Judah. As I say, Abraham was a Hebrew, but not Jewish, because Judah was his great-grandson, and he hadn't been born. There were no Jews on the planet before the birth of Judah, which was Jacob's son, Abraham's great-grandson. So you have definitely Hebrew stock, but that doesn't mean you're Jewish. I've got Hebrew stock. I'm a Levite. And I'm a Cohen, but I don't have any Jewish blood.
Well, my ancestors, doing the genealogy, found out we did learn that they were practicing Jews.
That's fine. I'm just saying it's not automatic.
Right. But this is just absolutely fascinating, and I'm learning about a whole new area of my family, and I hope others are listening too and learning something very exciting.
And all right, Sally.
You don't have to give blood to have your DNA taken. You can, Family Tree will send you a little vial with a Q-tip. You just rub it on the inside of your cheek, in your mouth, put it back in the bottle and send it off, and they'll tell you what tribe or what bloodline you are. And for your own health reasons, for your own knowledgeable ancestry, the more you know about yourself and your identity, the more stable and the more secure as a person you can be, the more confident you can be, and the more you'll have an understanding of why you are the way you are.
All right, to the wild card line we go. Joe is in Long Beach, California this morning. Hi, Joe. Welcome to Coast AM.
How you doing? I love your program. I just have two questions that I was hoping your guests could clarify on. You had mentioned that the 10 tribes had went towards the British Isles via the Black Sea. But this is a direct contradiction to what Second Ezra says, chapter 13, verse 40 and 50, says that they headed south down the Euphrates, where God calmed the waters, and they went to a land where man never dwelt. Even Christopher Columbus used this as evidence to get a power to get funding to come to America. And then my second question was, you guys had traced genetically the kings and queens of Europe via the Egyptians, King Tut, and you had linked that to Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, it's true that Joseph had married an Egyptian woman, but I don't understand how you're tracing Y chromosomes of Egyptians when women don't have Y chromosomes. So if you're tracing a Y chromosome, it would have come from Joseph. Ephraim and Manasseh, they would have inherited that Y chromosome from their father. So I just wanted to clarify on how you came to that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, Richard, I heard part of it. The first part was about, first of all, we didn't say that the tribes went just to the Black Sea. I mean, there were two main routes. They were scattered abroad, as the Bible says. They were scattered abroad. So some of them went to India. Some of them went all over the place. We're not saying they just went, you know, there's the famous pass called the Dariel Pass. Between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, right now in the Caucasian Mountains, and that's known as historically known as the Pass of the Israelites. So we're saying they were scattered abroad in all directions. However, the nations, the ones that Ephraim was and Manasseh were to be given a nation, France, they all went in different directions. But the tribes that went to those countries. Went either, it depends on which countries. Now, India is not an Israelite nation. However, many Israelites and some of the Lost Ten Tribes did travel there, and they traveled and set up and lived there in small pockets. So Israelites and the Ten Tribes alone did travel all over, but they were only the nations that they were given. Scotland, Ireland, and England was given to Ephraim. Reuben settled in France. But Spain was not a nation that was one of the 10 tribes, and Italy wasn't. But certainly there are parts of the 10 tribes that live there and settle there.
All right. The other question had to do with the other question had to do with the genetic evidence in England or the British Isles. You said coming from King Tut. The point he made was that the Y chromosome doesn't come from the female. The Y chromosome is only passed from the father to the son. So then that Y chromosome would have to come from Joseph,
That's
the point.
And that is the case. It does come from Joseph. But what the geneticists are saying is that basically, remember that Joseph, when Joseph and Abraham's family went into Egypt, they were of such large numbers. The reason why they were put and why the Pharaoh put them into captivity was because their numbers were getting so large that they were afraid that, like what were happening today in Germany and in northeastern Europe, they're getting so many refugees, they're starting to worry about their own culture being swallowed up. And that's what the Egyptians had the same problem. So the intermarriage of Joseph and Asenath created Ephraim and Manasseh, and the Genesis finds that certainly there is Joseph's descendants, but also there's males from Egypt as well who can be identified, not just Asenath. We're not talking about Asenath. The link with Asenath is just to recognize, for instance, America, its mother is an Egyptian woman, and take a look at the Washington Monument, the largest monument in America, is an Egyptian obelisk. All the work done on the pyramids, et cetera, is been done by the British Museum, and there's an obelisk in London as well. So what his point is true. It's right what he's saying, but the identification between Britain and these boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, that left Egypt, it's indicative, and the route out of Egypt to England through the Mediterranean, through the Straits of Gibraltar. I mean, Jeremiah brought the stone in 586 BC, the Leothael with the Princess Tiatefi, and Jeremiah is buried buried in Ireland. So the legends of Asenath that live on are confirmed by the genetics of the sons Ephraim, Manasseh, and Joseph.
All right. Well, fascinating conversation. I really appreciate your time, and I enjoyed it very much. Nelson and Wanda,
yes.
Thal.
Richard,
oh,
it's been...
thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's an exciting subject.
It was
and great.
And
hopefully we can get to the next part, which is Manasseh's always been is crying out today for rescue. And at the last Trump, the question is, will Trump be the Gideon, the next judge, the next Gideon to rescue them? Because this keeps on happening over and over and over as a cycle. Maybe that's something
okay.
we can talk about back after
next
the
time.
Election.
All right, tribaltalkers.com, the website. Thank you, Nelson and Wanda Thal. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Chris Burrows, Dan Galante, Nathan Staten, G. Lee, and here in Toronto, Nathan Smith, Scott Guest, and Tom Schenck, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your voices, your beautiful voices. So long.